This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me?
This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org. and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available this show on these websites and at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we have the pleasure on the 34th anniversary of KABF to be talking to Zachary Paulette, my old comrade and friend, who is the campaign director for the Public Interest Network, and also PERG and Environmental Action. Have I got that right, Zach?
Environment America, that's right.
Yeah,
Very close.
I know
in
Zach.
In the ballpark.
Yeah, I know Zach as the former political director for Acorn. And Zach, I bet when the station went on the air, were you head organizer in Arkansas at that time for Arkansas Acorn?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Scott Holliday. Zach, you must have been here for the big cake and celebration, huh, John? But we're so glad to have Zach here. Zach is a classic organizer, stays in the back, but we managed to get him to come up front with us on Wage World because we want to talk about, I know Zach's bound to be following what's happening on the midterms around the country. We have any chance, Zach? I mean, people are saying, oh, the Democrats may take Congress, they're going to lose a lot of seats, blah, blah, blah. But in politics, nothing is ever certain. So what are you feeling with your ear to the ground?
Well, I think it's going to be interesting. Although a lot of the talk you heard back, oh, in the early part of this year, oh, it's the blue wave, it's the resistance. I mean, I think that was smoking a little bit of dope. I mean, you have a real polarized country. I mean, you have the whole resistance effort. It's the energy's cooled down some, but it's still there. But Trump's popularity has, if anything, increased in the Republican base.
And holds held rock steady. It's amazing.
And his numbers now, although still low, are not really falling. So I mean, my sense is that there's more energy on the Democratic side. That's definitely true. But the Democrats often blow it, and I think there are some chances on, you know, it happening this year. Looking around the races, there's the U.S. Senate, where the Democrats have a really tough map. They're defending a lot of seats, including states like Montana, where I think John Tester, really excellent senator, has a good chance of winning. But in West Virginia, Missouri, Indiana, very, very hard for Democrats to win. South Dakota, another one. In the U.S. House, I mean, the Democrats, you know, need a dozen seats to take control. I mean, I think the Democrats will gain in seats. I think it's maybe like 50-50 whether they get control. And if you look at the races, I think the candidates are going to matter a lot, even though the election will be nationalized some. There'll be talk about Trump, where the Democrats have strong candidates, they'll have a better chance that the candidate really connects with the people. Where the Republicans have a strong candidate, they have a much better chance of surviving.
How about the strategic difference? Obviously, Trump is trying to get everything nationalized and these races and personalized around himself and his administration's policies. The Democrats seem to be saying to the candidates, go with whatever local issues seem to be working with you. Go with a very local, regional strategy, not so much national.
I think that the Democrats are right on that, provided that their candidates, you know, really reflect who that candidate is. I mean, you know, you hear a lot about authenticity. It can become like an old saw in politics, but I think it is true that if you're not a folksy type, you can't just really go out there and pretend to be folksy.
Right.
But if you are, then you really need to use it. I mean, I think so. Candidates really should tell their stories, whatever it is, to connect with the voters. I mean, I think Trump's strategy is, in a significant part, to focus things around the way that he cuts immigration, all around a fear thing. And I think, unfortunately, I think that, you know, you look at the polls, the majority of the country thinks wrong about this issue. And so I think the majority of the country, and especially the majority of white Americans, although they don't necessarily have the Trump, wait, you have to take care of yourself there, sir. They don't, the Republicans, yeah, don't have, I mean, the majority to be as, just like, racist as Trump is, but the whole fear of immigrants, the fear of the nation changing, the need for security of the borders, that's very popular in America. So to me, like, an example of a mistake that some of the Democrats have made is getting on this abolish ICE kick. I think that, like, if I was, you know, working for Trump, I would try to get the Democrats to do that. I think that is like a great strategy to help Trump save the House for the Republicans. I think many of the Democratic candidates are smart enough about that, and they talk in principle about how immigrants are good for America, how we need a comprehensive immigration reform in America, but they don't go on the abolish ICE because it just tells Americans, well, nobody cares about us.
And how about this children's issue on the border? Does that distract at all from Trump's immigration argument?
I think it helped Democrats and hurt Trump a month and a half ago. I don't think it will be such a big issue come November, partly because, you know, people's recollection is short and they'll sort of have it more or less fixed. And the people who were most exercised by it were largely people who were already going to vote for Democrats. So I think, I mean, it hurt him partly because I think, like, let's say your suburban moms, it was just beyond the pale, but I don't think it's a real deal breaker.
Turnout seems to be higher, though, in some of these run-up elections that we're seeing now. Have you looked at that at all, Zach?
Yeah, I think there's more energy on the Democratic side, and that is really good for the Democrats. And I think the Republicans really realize that. So, I mean, for example, on the Republican side, you know, they're talking about impeachment more than the Democrats, which I think is actually a smart strategy for them because they want to motivate their base to come out to stop
to protect
a unfair
Trump.
Mm-hmm. Impeachment. So I think that for Democrats, it's really smart to not talk about impeachment. Something like Mueller, it seems like, you know, he's sort of done it right. Like, you know, he's never on television. He never talks to the press. He's just out there, you know, doing what a prosecutor does, figuring it out and then letting the chips fall where they may. I think Tom Steyer, you know, environmentalist, you know, billionaire, done a lot of good things, you know, for politics in America.
Can't keep his mouth shut. Can't keep his foot out of his mouth.
Wants to run for president.
Poor Tom, yeah.
But his whole thing on impeach, I think, is not smart and actually helps Trump. It's a dumb play on their part.
You always wonder who in the world is giving Tom advice. But unfortunately, I think sometimes we know some of those people, so not much we can say.
We're talking. Tom gets most of his advice from Tom, actually.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's Having dealt with him several times, I'm sure that's true. And much like our current president. So what can we say? There's some similarities. We're talking to Zach Paulette, who's the campaign director for the People's, I mean, I said it wrong before, didn't I?
The Public Interest Network.
Public Interest Network. PIN was stuck in my mind, and all of a sudden I couldn't remember what the I was. So, Zach, are y'all involved in any of these efforts around voter registration, voter suppression? Yeah. How, I know I can tell you're monitoring this, but do y'all have your hand in anywhere that we should look at?
Our groups do several things. You know, voter registration is one. Back, a decade ago, Acorn did, the largest work around the country of low-income African-American and Latino voter registration around the country.
An effort that you led and
took
them
down.
Job,
yeah. So the Public Interest Network, through what we call the Community Voters Project, is doing our part. So we're doing a project in six states doing site-based African-American Latinx voter registration. We'll do around 150 to 175,000 registrations, so a good amount, not as large as the efforts of a decade ago. And then we have a whole range of student chapters around the country. Yeah, the PERG first got started on that when Ralph Nader was fighting General Motors.
That was the PERG model.
Years ago. And so they're still active on campuses today, and they do a new voters project in which there's an organizer on each campus who trains a whole set of campus volunteers at registrations that are happening last week, this week, and next week. And then they do a two-month blitz of college students to register them either at their campus address or their parental address, and then a whole turnout program, including pledge cards. We are seeing overall more energy, I think, from young people, African-Americans, and Latinx voters, and that's a plus for the Democrats and for those constituencies. But if the Democrats think that demographics is destiny, they will be missing the boat. In California, maybe that works. California, it's half African American, Asian, and Latinx, going in that direction, and with huge, left progressive bases, in the more affluent and wider populations. But in the rest of America, we're 60%+ white, that's who votes. And so if you say, you only want to win the votes of people of color in America, you do not win elections except in places like New York City and California.
Exactly. What are the six states that y'all are looking to concentrate in?
Well, on the voter registration side, we're doing that in North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Florida, Colorado, Arizona, and California. Our other work is on voter contact work. So our members contribute. We're a membership-based organization, and so we have an independent expenditure pack that pays for door-to-door voter turnout, education, persuasion. So we're doing a large program in Colorado where the Democrats are looking to take both houses of the legislature, hold the governor's office, and have two interesting contested House races. So that'll be our largest work. Then have a set of that going on in Pennsylvania and North Carolina as well. And the other thing we're doing on the House, with our Environment America group, it's a membership group of people who care about the environment. It's climate, it's our parks, it's clean air, clean water. And so we've identified a set of 10 challengers, strong environmental champions in close races. And so we're doing programs looking to support those candidates. these will be largely from digital ads, telephone calls, some visibility, and U.S. mail. The whole idea is to make the case to a set of voters. We identify those voters who care about the environment and let them know. Because, you know, your average voter, you know, someone running for Congress, they don't know who the hell they are.
Right.
Say, okay, well, here's candidate X. They're running against Republican Y, and here's the difference. So there's like, there's a fellow named Dean Phillips out in Minnesota in the suburbs outside of Minneapolis-St. Paul. He's actually Dear Abby's grandson and strong environmentalist. He's running in a race where he's a slight underdog, but we think there can be a chance. So we're trying to use, you know, our members to do what they care about. And then secondly, we want to show that the environment can help in elections. We do know that, you know, the environment is not the issue that elections depend on in America today. You know, people, that's not their first issue when they go to the polls. And so in some ways, you know, it doesn't show up on the polls, so the candidates don't talk about it. But we know that there's a set of voters, including a set of, like, independent swing voters, again, some of these, like, suburban, middle-class folks who, they're not hard progressive Democrats. They're certainly not like Trump Republicans. They may vote Republican at least half the time, but they care about, you know, the health of their kids, the clean air, the clean water, climate change, a bunch of them. So we figure that that's a group we can
now reach. That used to be Tom Steyer's big drumbeat. This ought to be the kind of thing he should support. I don't know if he is supporting environmental action on this, environmental America, rather. Yeah. But that would have, 2 years ago or so, that was his big thing, not impeachment, right?
Yeah. And he's not, you know, we partner with him on a number of things. He's not a significant financial backer at all. But his Next Gen America organization is doing a set of environmental work. They're more focusing on young voters and doing some good work around the country on that. And then he's also then just directly supporting some candidates, including the sort of upset, or the little bit seen coming victory in Florida this week, in which Andrew Gillum, you know, an organizer, we worked with in the Acorn World when he was the young kid working for People for the American Way, doing, you know, voter registration, voter rights work. He's the mayor of Tallahassee, good presence, and he won the Democratic primary. He'll have a tough race against a far-right Trumpite congressman, but we'll have a shot. And interestingly, him being on the ballot will probably help the embattled U.S. senator there, Bill Nelson, you know, a good senator, sort of older than dirt, you know, not the most charismatic guy in the world. So there's something in Florida that Nelson, who is being challenged by the multimillionaire governor, self-funder, right, Rick Scott there, I mean, a terrible elected official. I mean, Nelson, the incumbent, is probably the underdog. I mean, Gillum being on the ticket, you know, may motivate, you know, enough additional, you know, African-American and Latinx vote that it could actually help Nelson. I mean, Gillum will need that vote to come out strong, but he will need to hold the majority white Democratic support. He doesn't need to win, you know, white Florida, but he has to get close to 40%, and that'll be tough.
Yeah. Now, I know Steyer was involved, and y'all may have been as well, in some of these initiative campaigns on the state level. I saw one of our old associates in Michigan.
John Freeman, yes.
Right, John Freeman, when I was up there a couple of months ago. We have a project in Detroit, and at that point he was, you know, busily, that was winter time, and he came over to Lansing to see the movie, and you know, they were trying to get signatures, but set the campaign up, and I guess they made a deal. But there are some initiatives elsewhere that they're still trying to put forward. Are y'all involved in any of that with Environmental America? Or?
There were, I mean, three that with energy from Steyer's Next Gen America and a whole set of coalition partners move forward. The one in Michigan, you're right, they had it going. There'd been an environmental measure in Michigan 4 years ago that got beat fairly badly. The utility companies didn't want it on the ballot. And they maybe thought they could have beaten it, but would have cost them $30, $40, $50 million. And so they were able to cut a fairly good deal that moves significant renewable energy through the legislature. And so they're not doing the ballot measure there. So there are two that are going to the ballot, one in Nevada, one in Arizona. They'll both be hotly contested.
And the basic issue is just accelerating the period of time when they have to get to a certain percentage of renewables. Is that
exactly
right?
And I mean, to set benchmarks that on a stair-step basis, 10% to 20% to 30% to 40%. The one in Nevada, I think, will pass. The one in Arizona is going to be a war. And
Arizona's going to be a war on every front this year, isn't it? I'm glad to hear y'all are in there.
Yeah. On this renewable energies, it's legislative, not elections, but just this week, the California Assembly passed a bill, SB 100, been promoted by state senator there, Kevin DeLeon, who's also now running for the U.S. Senate. He won't make that. But he was a champion for this bill. They thought they had it passed in 2017, and time ran out, and they couldn't get it through the assembly. Environment California, our affiliate there, had the initial idea for the thing with DeLeon. DeLeon decided to champion it, and just this week, they won the vote in the assembly. This will require California to move to 100% renewables by 2045. And there is, a path to do it in California. There's, great growth in the solar and some in the wind there. The key will be increasing the battery technologies to store the things over the next 30 years.
Certainly, Arizona Public Service, the big utility in Arizona, has been unpopular for decades. I remember when we first opened our office in Phoenix, they were our big target for years there. But that's still going to be a close race.
It'll be a close race.
They have so much sun there, you'd think that solar would be more popular. But
they are bad actors. In the signature drive for that ballot measure, the Arizona Public Service paid people literally thousands of dollars to disrupt the whole signature process. They tried first to put a fake competing one on the ballot that didn't work. They would go to the canvassers and offer them huge amounts of money to leave, and they would just pay them off.
Ouch.
That all didn't work, so it's on the ballot now. Their whole rap is it's going to cost you a fortune. And so, it's the big lie. But I remember, in Acorn days, we would do a whole range of initiatives on living wage, you name it. I found, whatever initiative we did, the other side would always say, it's a job killer.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what the issue was.
Yeah.
And that was their TV. They'd run the same TV ad for any kind of progressive measure. And they're doing that same thing in Arizona, just it'll raise your rates.
And talking about bad actors in utilities, I know you're probably not following this, but our old buddies at Entergy, used to be Middle South Utilities that we fought for years here in Arkansas as well, paid actors twice to go to hearings in New Orleans at the city council level and to say that they wanted to build for the city council to support building a new energy plant in the New Orleans area. Well, of course, it came out and then they denied
That's
it.
Wonderful.
And, so it's now a hot mess, but it sounds like in Arizona you can still do that stuff and get away with it at least for a while. But why these utilities, after 50 years we've been dealing with them, still think they can play these old tricks? I was rewriting a story. And incidentally, I looked at your old piece on the ambulance pledge campaign in Fort Smith. We're doing a Lessons of this Field book on campaigns. I'm thinking whether or not we can slip that in, because, you know, that was a good campaign. You forget about stuff like that. But looking at the old White Bluff plant, Zach, we don't have much time left. You and I could have gone forever, but what do people need to do here to be ready for? I wanted to get into voter suppression. Obviously, you're involved in North Carolina as well. They just, court said, once again, no to the gerrymandering. Is that a hope for area? What do we need to, where do we need to really put our energy and attention?
Well, I say, in North Carolina, it was interesting. I mean, the judges just really got pissed at the Republicans for, like, you know, they give them an order.
How many times? Like, yeah, I mean, it's like three times or four times.
So, I mean, they know that, like, redoing the lines today, you know, 2 months before the election, is sort of wild, but, like, we don't care. You just can't keep messing with us.
That's right.
For, you know, for here in Arkansas, for your Arkansas listeners, we have, you know, some interesting measures on the ballot. We have minimum wage on the ballot again, and I think the voters of Arkansas are going to pass that. We have...
I've been listening to ACO's regular announcements almost every hour about getting out and voting for that. So it's great to see the old Acorn in Arkansas stepping up so largely in this issue.
It's a good issue.
Yeah.
Definitely right. We have a measure that all the big business interests are pushing, what they call tort reform, what's really just a, you know, our church friends say, put a price on life, and means that, you know, if your mama gets hurt in the nursing home, no lawyer's going to take the case because there's just not enough money to make it work.
And I read, is this true, that the evangelicals are starting to organize against that? Because it's almost like their view on the abortion issue, that how can you put a price on life? I actually put that into People's News on KBF and elsewhere.
Yes. In fact, a couple of us here in Arkansas put together a little, like, working group. We call it the Arkansas Democracy Working Group with these social conservatives 2 years ago. And the whole idea was, hey, we know we're going to disagree on a bunch of stuff, but we actually agree on some things. So let's just sit down, get to know each other, find the things we agree on and work together on them. And things we disagree on, well, that's fine. Everybody does their own thing.
And this came out of that process a little bit, or had
I'd say... not exactly, in that Jerry Cox, you know, the fellow who runs the Family Council here in Arkansas, and he would have come to the same conclusion regardless.
Right.
But it had a whole set of relationships that then helps that, you know, to spread on both the liberal and conservative side of the spectrum. And now actually, you know, Jerry and the Family Council is working with us on some possible voter registration reform issues, which is, that's one he probably would not have worked on before.
Interesting.
But he's very principled on that, and it's really like about poor people. Like, you know, poor people, you know, shouldn't be taken advantage in this way. And he really sees it in a very honest way as a moral thing. So it's good.
I wish that kind of movement would spread elsewhere. It's a heck of a good idea. Zach, one of the things we always do in Wage World, we've been talking to Zach Paulette, who's the campaign director for the Public Interest Network, which is very active in many ways throughout the country. How do people find out more about PIN, PERG, Environmental America, and your work? Is there a website?
The best is to go to the PERG website. It's www.perg.org.
P-I-R-G.
P-I-R-G. A terrible name, but what can you do? I mean, Acorn is... I mean, Doug Phelps, the founder of the National Pergs, he always says, boy, Acorn, they had a great name. Perg, we have a terrible name. But
he's not lying, but he inherited the name, so what can you do?
And then... for all the environmental work, just go to www.environmentamerica.org.
And I bet there's always thanks for a donation to support this great work.
Yeah, you know, these websites, they all have a donation button, so feel free to go there. Yes, indeed.
And given that we've been talking a lot about the midterms and initiatives and whatever, is there also a way that people can support some of that work, or is that also displayed on the website?
For that work, I mean, for their own effort, people need to get informed and vote. In terms of contributing, they can do that to the C4s. at both PERG and Environment America. Again, go to www.environmentamerica.org.
I may try to lure you back on after the midterms, and we'll talk about what really happened. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sings, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Thanks to Zach Paulette this week, and next week we'll have another guest. This is Wade Rathke from Wade's World.
Thanks, Wade. Take care.